This podcast is proudly brought to you by Infinity Media, incubating innovative businesses in the media industry.
Hi, I'm Gordon Muller. I'm the guru in the Doc and Guru podcast. Thanks for being with us. For those of you who don't know me, I've spent over 40 years in the media industry in South Africa and pretty much made it my home, my life, my passion. I have other passions, unfortunately, for my sins. I'm an Arsenal supporter and a Sharks supporter, so we're going to do pretty much everything on the show as it pertains to media, marketing and money, but we don't take jokes about Arsenal or the Sharks.
I'm Doug Mateus, the doc on the show. And again, for those of you who don't know me, I spent 30 years in various companies in South Africa running different marketing functions. And the last job I had, I was privileged enough to work with a team that took the brand to the fastest growing brand in South Africa in 2018 with a 47% year-on-year growth. So that was a great achievement for the team, and I'm really proud of that. From a personal point of view, I do a little bit of cycling and also snow skiing, so we quite enjoy that. But again, today's discussion is around all things marketing and media.
Yep, that's right, Doc. All things marketing and media. No subject too big, no topic too small, no subject too hot to handle. Please get in touch with us on our Facebook page, follow us, like us, whatever it takes. We would love you to be involved with the show, and we really want to make it as inclusive and as energetic as I know this industry is capable of. Morning, Doc. How are you doing?
Hey, Gordon. I'm fine. How are you?
Right. I'm really excited about the activities lined up for the next couple of days, because we're now plugging into your Marketer of the Year Awards, which is really exciting for all of us.
Yeah, it is great. And just, I mean, for the listeners who may have missed that a while ago, you know, I'm privileged to be judging two categories, one of which is the Marketer of the Year category and in the Marketing Awards. So if you want to go and reference that, if you're out there and you want to look at and see what I'm talking about, it's www.marketingawards.co.za. You can see all the categories and the people nominated. And today we have, you know, we've got all our finalists agreeing to come onto the show over the next few weeks. So it's great, and today we've got our first finalist. So, you know, big welcome to Hedy Brouwer from Hollard. Hedy, how's it going?
Good, thank you. Nice to talk to the two of you.
Yeah, and I mean, first up, I mean, big, you know, well done, obviously, you know, to get into the finalists. So that's fantastic. From a personal point of view, and secondly, on the brand, you know, I know that the Hollard brand has got a smaller budget than, say, some of your direct competitors, and well done, you know, for breaking into the Brands eKantar, you know, top 30 most valuable brands in South Africa last year. So that's a fantastic achievement.
Thanks. Yeah, it was really a moment of sunshine in what was a heck of a bleak year, and being recognized in this Marketer of the Year finalist thing is really something. Appreciation is everything. I was saying to somebody last week that neuroscience says we need 5 times more appreciation than criticism, and there's so much criticism out there, especially through social media, just in our milieu all the time, that some appreciation is just wonderful. So,
well, I'm not too clued up on neuroscience, but I think my wife might have written that particular chapter on needing more 5 points of praise on a daily basis. So, Hedy, yeah, congratulations. It's really great to have you on the show in this sort of context. The last time I think you and I got together, we were rocking at Oppie Coppie. So, Doc, she's not all brains. She's a good jawler as well. I can attest to that. Eh?
Well, I mean, that's part of what we're looking for, Gordon. You know, we're looking for that all-round marketer, you know, a person who's obviously got the marketing science and ability to deliver, but also a person. And I know, you know, Hedy, and we'll chat a little bit about your personal approach to marketing, you know, how you've groomed and grow and continue to grow teams. And part of that, Gordon, is fun and you know, the Hollard culture. So we must chat a little bit about that. You know, I'm always interested in how you bring the marketing alive. It's not just the billboard that I see on the highway or the TV ad or piece of digital that could serve to me.
Yeah, that serves as a really positive kind of message to me. I mean, you know, in my era of advertising, you know, it was about, you know, I kept perhaps too touchy-feely, but I mean, I think the numbers seem to have overtaken so much of the magic that it's good to see that point of emphasis being there. But I'm the media passenger on the marketing train this week, so every now and again I'll pull the train whistle and signal my intention to bring media back to the marketing table.
Yeah, so I mean, Gordon, Heidi, first up, but let's just chat a little bit about, you know, the culture at Hollard. What are you achieving? What are you trying to achieve? And where you are on the journey and how you bring the marketing alive, both internally as well as obviously the bits that we see in the public.
So, you know, I was attracted to Hollard because of its culture and because of a certain something that made it special. When I met our chairman the grandson of our original founder, A.D. Enthoven, for the first time, I was honest. I said I didn't ever have a burning, yearning desire to be in insurance, but a desire to work with Hollard, absolutely, and with this family and the essence that they bring to everything that they do. And that's the truth, you know. And sometimes people think I brought the fun and the quirk to Hollard because I was at Kalula, and I didn't. It was there, and that's also what attracted me. And I'm going to come back to that in one of your later questions if we get there. But the essence of what Hollard is and the family that owns it shines through in everything. And that gives me such a beautiful foundation on which to grow the brand both internally and externally. I mean, I did an orientation. We call it Nothing Rhymes with Purple because nothing rhymes with purple. And I'll let you two guys give it a try. Turtle does not rhyme with purple, just to be absolutely clear. We call our onboarding Nothing Rhymes with Purple because we just need people to understand that actually this is a really special place and it isn't like anything else. And in this current lockdown, we have to do it virtually, and we've translated our live Nothing Rhymes with Purple to an online. And part of what I do is I take them on a tour of our campus and explain just the things you'll see and things you'll experience when you get there. We've got people working seven months or so, and they've never been to our campus, which is our heart and soul. Mm. And one of the things I show is the foosball tables and the climbing wall and the table tennis tables and all that stuff. We had that stuff before the ad agencies and actually Google, which is the be-all and end-all of cool places to work, before they had it. Mm. It was when Hollard built the campus more than a dozen years ago, it was there. And having that substrate to work on is just a gift. So, you know, the purpose is built into everything. It wasn't like, let's try to be purpose-led. Hollard is purpose-led. It wasn't. So, having all of that to work with is just honestly a gift and a dream come true. And it means not having to be, you know, my husband taught me this, the definition of integrity, loosely stolen from someone far wiser than he or I, is that what you think, what you say, and what you do is all in sync. And if you're working with that, then really it all just flows. And that's what I get to do every day, is I get to communicate a brand that is completely in integrity. And that's just special.
And, you know, talking about thinking and saying, one of the key positioning statements is a better future starts with hello. Tell us how you arrived at that property. And just, you know, I think that might unlock a lot of the kind of the human aspect of the brand behind the communication.
You know, it's unreal. It's like as if you were looking at my Facebook, our brand story. And for those of you that are listening, and you definitely can't see me, I'm showing the guys the Hollard brand cakebook. We talk about one of our essences of our cake, of our brand, is being most human. And of course, we don't say that in our communication. But the fact that you express that how we express our brand really means everything to me. So a better future starts with hello. Our brand purpose is to enable more people to create and secure a better future. And actually, we built that as an extra team, as an evolution of our vision and mission. At the same time as we were building our communication strategy for the brand, and they just collided in this beautiful, true, honest, serendipitous thing. And we communicated how we do that for a couple of years, that Hollard believes in better futures, creating better futures. And then our new, well, he's not so new anymore. Our new CEO, Saxon Tumbela, said when he took over 3 years ago, that for him, inclusivity is everything. And we need to make sure that we are bringing that to life, what it means to be included and a good place, a place that everybody belongs, both inside and outside. And we took that to our agency, and we got on the idea. And actually, this is a really challenging story because we were at the time not with our lead agency, who presently is FairMailYNR, but with M&C Saatchi Able, who through some conflict issues with another brand had to resign our account. So we started this campaign with one agency and completed it with another, which is a story for a book. But we said, what is one big issue facing South Africa these days with so much diversity that we have? And it's that we look at each other and we see our differentness. We see what makes us different. And actually, on a lot of levels, it frightens us. It makes us unavailable to one another to build a country that we all need. And really, we translated that into something that says, my better future is connected to your better future, and it starts with hello. And that's how the campaign was born. We grew a campaign. We didn't have a lot of money. And so on the 11th of every month was Hello Day, because the two holes in Hello look like an 11. So that was good. And on the 11th of every day was Hello Day. And we said, how do we help you see each other, South African? Say hello and realize that together we actually can create a better future. And that's the story.
Now, you know, a lot of South African cropped up there a lot, you know, because my advice to you, Doc, is don't try this campaign in England. Now, I went on a walking tour of Cornwall about 2 years ago, and in my normal enthusiastic South African way, I was saying hello to everybody, and they look at you there. It's like being on the tube and saying hello to the person next to you. They don't like it when you say hello. So you have definitely tapped into some unique South African kind of greeting culture, Heidi. Doc, you've got like 20 questions here, and our media is like 21, but so I need you to move on.
But Gordon, I've got the easy questions. You know, your questions, geez, I'd have to go and read up on even what your questions meant, never mind what the possible answer could be. Heidi, I think, Gordon, just before I finish that point, it's what we spoke about a few weeks ago in terms of seeing similarities, not Heidi, sometimes non-obvious similarities. I guess as South Africans, you know, on a superficial level, you can see race, you can see gender, and maybe to a degree, depending on which industry, you can see the kind of job a person works in. It's either a person with a jacket or a tie or a suit or somebody with an overall. But I mean, we don't scratch the surface. And your point is, you know, and we made the point about diversity in terms of finding those non-obvious similarities, which may be certainly a level or two down. Hey, just for our listeners out there, one or two more salient campaigns you worked on. Let's just talk a little bit about the Insta Story books and your Daredevil run, if you don't mind just taking us through that.
Yes, absolutely. So I don't know which to do first, because they both have such a beautiful place in my heart. So Daredevil run, which we are about to announce that we have to put on hold for a little bit this year whilst we get our corona under control. Daredevil Run was born in one of our, at the time, sister companies, Etana Insurance, which is now back in the Hollard fold. And it was created literally out of a dare. Somebody said to somebody, this is a loose translation, I wasn't in the room, if you run through peak hour traffic in the speedo, I'll donate money to charity. And a dozen years later, we have 5,000 men running, men and boys running through peak hour traffic in purple speedos, and we raise awareness for testicular and prostate cancer, because the male cancers do not get the attention, the level of attention and education, that educational awareness that the female cancers get. And so in our human, quirky way, we bring something that is just not talked about, especially amongst black men, where it's prostate cancer is particularly prevalent. And we get people to do in a fun, take yourself seriously, not what you do seriously, which is one of our mantras. And that running around and talking about what you just did, which is just such an act of bravery. We say, if you think running 5Ks in a speedo in public is brave, imagine dealing with cancer. And so in our unique brand way, we just raise awareness and funds actually for Cancer Association and the Prostate Cancer Foundation. And, you know, even that, we've worked hard to be more inclusive. It used to be really white guys only. We've worked very hard to communicate in vernacular. It's a challenging subject matter to find a way to communicate in African languages, but we've done it. And our run is more inclusive than we could ever have wished for. So that's extremely, extremely special. This year we'll remind people, because actually it was World Cancer Day the other day, so we've got a little campaign to remind people that even in Corona, you still need to check yourself, because this ties also with our purpose. Create better futures. Check yourself. Sort out your future. And then we'll do the run later in the year again. Insta Storybooks was something where we use social media for social good. The President Ramaphosa had said in his State of the Nation address that a huge proportion, I don't remember numbers like Gordy does, but a huge proportion of children cannot read for meaning in South Africa. Now, how do you create a future or a life if you cannot read for meaning? And our team at VML and my team in Hollard put their heads together and came up with this idea of, what if we create storybooks that are available on Instagram, little mini stories, and we invited South African, both writers, illustrators, and people who just had a book in them, and I mean a little mini book, that we made available. We curated the content, we made them available on Instagram, downloadable, free, and we so that you could print them on one A4 page, fold them up, and anybody could have a book. So to book, use Instagram for good, social media for social good, and give reading material to South Africans who don't have it.
You're listening to The Doc and the Guru, proudly brought to you by Infinity Media.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's a really intriguing exercise. And to my mind, because my experience of the Hollard campaign is it's kind of seamless. So I'm not conscious of a shift from strategy to tactical expression. So go for a walk on Braamfontein, Spruiten. The walk is, you know, is sponsored by Hollard. It just seems to be seamless. So, Heidi, when you're planning, how do you sort of say, okay, here's the strategic angle, and do you tag the tactical on, or do they just become one milieu which you conceptualize, you know, at the same point in time?
So it's such a great question, because I say all the time that you've got to keep the main thing the main thing. And that's your strategic intent, right? And in this beautiful cake book that nobody can see, but I promise it's in my hand, is our brand strategy. It's our brand purpose. It's our brand main thing, really. And you don't change that like every 5 minutes just because you're bored with it. I'll give you a little anecdote in a second. So you keep that as your substance, right, for a period. It's not like your brand values change. I remember being at a company once that will go nameless, where after a year of working on brand values and having that formula with all little bits and pieces and getting the research back, the expo team said, okay, great. Well, we scored well on that. Should we change? What are our values going to be for next year? And I remember saying, oh, folks, it's like the Ten Commandments. You don't suddenly have like new ones. You've got these ones right. And that's your brand essence and your brand strategy and your brand purpose. You just, like, it is you. It's you. It's who you are. And you stick at it. And you check constantly that you are in integrity, that you are being consistent. And then the tactical things just fall into place because you know what the main thing is. You know who you be and who you are and what you can and can't do. I suppose, you know, I talk about it takes a village to raise a brand like a child. But your brand is like your child, and you've got to know your child so well that you know what it can and can't do, what it does fit with, what it doesn't fit with, where it can play, if it's good at tennis or it's rather good at art and creative writing, and don't force it into places it can't go. Then you'll know which tactical stuff does fit and doesn't fit. So I hope that's answering the question, is that strategy is a slow burn. It's your longer thing. It's something that you keep at, that you don't keep looking over your shoulder to see what your competitors are doing. And that's important for consumers as well, because they also want consistency. And just a little anecdote that I promised, and you know, we could spend 6 hours because I can hack the hind leg off a donkey. But you know, it's like in my first marketing job in 1912, I worked at a pharmaceutical company, and we used to send the reps out with detail aids, when they used to go on like a 6-week cycle to the doctors, and they were advertising marketing an antibiotic at the time called Dalasin C. I mean, it was boring as hell. But we'd give them this detail aid with a new sexy tactical campaign. After 6 weeks of seeing 8 to 10 doctors a day in the Bosfeld or wherever they were, they'd come back, throw that thing at you and say, enough, give me something else. But in truth, they might have seen it 900 times over the 6 weeks. Doc had seen it once and maybe one ad in whatever journal he read or she read. Mm. And so we've got to be careful that we don't get tired of our strategy and think we need to change it when our consumers might have only seen it once, an execution against it.
Absolutely, Heidi, and I can't agree more with you. And I've seen, you know, I've through my career as well worked in winning teams and in teams that perhaps were not that stellar. And it's amazing in teams that perhaps are chasing the game, you spend more time chopping and changing, focusing on what the opposition's doing, as opposed to staying true to your purpose and focusing on what the customer really needs and wants at that time. So, you know, I can certainly vouch for that. And it's, you know, it's far better for me to work with and to work with a team that wants to stay true. And it's great that you guys have found and carved out that place of truth for you. And as you say, you know, that's your North Star and you stay true to that.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the things for me which resonates in that discussion is the degree to which we've allowed procurement to treat advertising and the communication relationship as if it was a transaction like buying a car tire. So, you know, you can't have that depth of empathy and that depth of understanding and that desire to do what we did last year but better, newer, fresher when, you know, you're changing agencies every 3 years. It takes you 3 years to understand a brand, let alone come up with great you know, sort of great creative work. And to that point, Heidi, one of the most significant documents that I've referenced in the last week or two has come out of the World Federation of Advertisers, which is called Project Spring. And it is a revisiting of the reality that procurement and marketing has to work hand in hand. It's not just what they call a cost-out benefit. It's got to be a value in. So, for instance, we know that during lockdown, trust has become a critical issue for most brands, and I would guess in the case of Hollard or in the insurance sector generally, even more so. What kind of premium, you know, faced with procurement at the one hand wanting a discount, what kind of premium would you place on putting your brand and your communication in a positively framed, trusted environment?
You know, it shouldn't be such a unhuvakled issue, really. It shouldn't, because there's so many little inputs into this topic. And, you know, one input is that Baxter takes a village to raise a brand, right? And procurement actually should be part of your village. The problem is procurement can't be experts at everything. They're not IT experts and marketing experts and catering and hospitality experts. So when they come along, they apply their instrument, which now is a bit blunt next to your needs, to your thing, to your problem. So I think maybe the first point I'd make is that you have to teach them about your world. I mean, right now we've got a finance guy who has got a marketing degree. It's like a dream come true because his interest in our context and what makes us our world work is there. His understanding is there, and it just makes dealing with finance like honestly next level. Yeah, I also believe in learning to speak other people's languages because, you know, we make it's about them understanding us. We need to understand them as well. And it's really about adult-adult communication as well. The minute you're going bloody procurement, believe me, they're going bloody marketing, and you're on a hiding to nothing. So I really believe in mature adult-adult dialogue, no matter with whom, with my agency that I want to kill this week, or they want to kill me maybe, procurement, finance, whoever it is. You have to learn, you have to find a common language that you both understand. You have to speak to one another like adults already. That's two things. The third thing is that, you know, price is never a thing on its own. And I'm harking back now, I suppose, to my market research days where in analytical work we used to do about what key drivers of consumer choice are. And we used to do regressions and to work out which multifactorial analyses. Am I impressing you yet? Please say yes.
No, not at all. We love that. Yeah, Doc was explaining to me last week. I just talk about massaging the numbers. He called it two-handed regression. So, Doc, eyes are alive here.
Yeah. How do you know that? I mean, when the data, you know, when the data doesn't really suit us, it doesn't really say what we wanted to say. You know, Sailor Gordon, we take this imaginary two hands and we push all the stuff together and we call it the two-handed regression, and now it sits in the nice.
Also known as media planning, yeah.
we used to say we torture it until it confesses.
Exactly right. we'll tell you the answer. Just
give us a minute. But really, we used to do this. And I never in one piece of research found price as a driver. There's always a balance between price, quality, and value. Example, is Mercedes expensive? Yes, well, that's the price. Is the value high? Yes, it's the quality high. Right, so you balance. And we have to teach the people who are on our team, and procurement should be on our team, that there's more to things than price. We have to explain to them how creativity works, that it's a process. I mean, it is nearly as demanding a relationship as a marriage. And Gordon's seen my beloved husband tolerate opikopi, so he knows, he's seen it. We've just had our 30th anniversary. But it really is, a creative relationship is fraught. And we have to explain that and teach procurement that. I think it's possible. On price, though, there are frameworks, right? So too expensive and too cheap are also not okay. So there's a band, and there's a set of ingredients that will help us make the best choice with procurement for our needs. But I'm not going to give procurement a list of who I might be interested in until I've had a coffee date with them and seen if there's chemistry for this creative marriage, because otherwise we're going to be sunk. So those are a bunch of thoughts on that.
Thanks, Hadi. And I think, you know, I mean, one of the big takeouts, and again, you know, some people would say, but it's obvious. But if it was that obvious, well, why don't we do it better? Is adult communication, you know, is having those open channels of communication. But sometimes, you know, I don't know, sometimes it's out of the, you know, the mouth of kids type thing. You know, at 3 and 4, you haven't understood consequence. So you tend to tell the truth or your version of the truth. Whereas as adults, you know, sometimes we change things to suit our narrative. As we move towards the end, Hadi, and the time's flown, I'm going to leave Gordon to close with just the last question from my side. Just one or two or three points, practical points that you believe people can, who are listening, can apply into their marketing for 2021 and beyond.
A few practical points. So it would be remiss if I didn't say that you have to keep the main thing, that you have to remember what your strategy is, remember where your ship is sailing to, stay on course and just keep your focus. Stop looking behind you, because it's really now when everybody's talking about who's pivoting where, who's pivoting and who, what's the new normal, all that crap. You've got to be very
Gordon and I've banned ourselves from all pivot. Those cliches. We hate them, okay? We'll allow guests, but one only.
I say them just to say to people, don't bloody say them, they're so limited. Your consumers want consistency, right? They want to know that they that you still are who you said you were, that you will always be there, and you must think FTC POV from the customer's point of view. The other thing is, Gideon Novick, when I was at Kulula, used to say to me, you know, you repeat yourself quite a lot, but I know why, because when the rest of us walk out the meeting, we're all thinking about other things, And when we come back the next time, we've really forgotten what you said the last time. So I get why you repeat. And I do. And I don't mind. I don't get sick of my own spiel. Repeat, 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 repeat. And then when you think someone might not remember, repeat again. Repeating also helps you remember or check that that you're on. You know what I mean? That it makes sense. And I suppose the last thing which ties into Takes a Village to Raise a Brand is WIGSOP. I like myself an acronym. The whole is greater than the sum of the parts. Don't split yourself up. My worst split is digital versus non-digital or analog or whatever.
Great.
Consumers are whole 360 people, and they are not segmenting their feelings towards your brand depending on whether you advertise digitally or analogically. So be joined up.
I celebratory note on that, Larson, because I mean that is the new frontier. And just quick to loop back, your discussion around procurement for me is absolutely right. Where we get in front of procurement people and explain to them what it is that we're actually buying, that I've discovered that buying media and procurement objectives are not mutually exclusive. They are extraordinarily compatible, particularly when you move into the attribution space. But Heidi, that's all we got for the day, unfortunately. I'd love to chat longer. Congratulations once again on being a Marketer of the Year finalist. Doc has taken me through the process, and it's been pretty hard work to get already where you've got to. So good luck in the final judging process, and congratulations. Outstanding achievement, and look forward to seeing you at Oppie Coppie once again when they open it up for us. There's an age limit, Doc. You might be a bit young for our party.
Lekker, thanks. Lovely to cheers, talk everyone. To you. Always happy to chat again.
Thanks, Heidi. Talk later. Bye. Bye now. And so that was another episode of The Doc and the Guru. Please don't forget to get hold of us on Facebook, like us, follow us, subscribe to the podcast. And then from my side, you can get hold of me on LinkedIn, Dr. Doug Mataz. I'm very active and very keen to hear about your views, and certainly will respond, and hopefully we can bring that into the show.
Thanks, Doc, and it's Gordon Miller, the Guru, signing off. Thank you for being with us and listening into this podcast today. You can pick up the discussion with me on my Twitter handle, @MzanziMedia, and I'd love to engage with you on any of the issues that we've taken on the show. And take us at our word. This is really going to be an open forum. There are no subjects that are taboo, and we'd love to have some of the younger, more under-listened, if that's the correct phrase, voices to join us in this discussion. Thanks for your time.
The Doc and the Guru, proudly brought to you by Infinity Media, incubating innovative businesses in the media industry.